Hello again, and welcome to our podcast, Conversations in Noosa. My name is John Caruso. Estonia is a Baltic country smaller than Tasmania, with a population of around 1.3 million people. Erika Hackett's parents fled Estonia, looking to make a new life and to raise a family in a new country. In this podcast, we talk about Erika's early life as a model and stockbroker, revisiting the country her family fled from, walking the Camino, and the work she does as president of Slow Food Noosa. I hope you enjoy the podcast.
Well, it is a commitment. I love what I do, and I guess I fell into it. I had been in Noosa for a couple of years when I was asked to attend a slow food breakfast meeting, and I went along and I loved it. And then they said, why don't you come on the committee? And I said, oh, what do I have to do? And they said, oh, you can be assistant treasurer. And I said, okay. Oh, no, sorry, assistant secretary. So I said, okay, fine, I think I can do that. And then Anne Marshall, she stepped down from the role of secretary, and then I stepped into her role as the proper secretary. So then things went along and I started to get more involved with what Slow Food was all about and meeting farmers and chefs and restaurateurs and all that. And next minute they said, well, hey, we need a president. Why don't you step up? And I said, well, I don't know if I can do that. They said, of course you can. So I thought, okay, I'll give it a go. So here I am 7 years later.
Yeah.
Look, I love absolutely everything about the job or what I do, because it's a total commitment, it's total involvement. I'm very passionate about Noosa. I'm very passionate about the community. I'm very passionate about the people that live here, and I love meeting new people and getting them involved in Slow Food. So the committee is very important. We work very closely together. Well, they're not actually handpicked, but they all have certain skills that fit in to the roles.
Yeah. Do you vote on those positions? Is that how it works?
Well, we talk about them and say, now, what are you good at? You know, what can you do? What have you done in the past, you know? So some people are a little bit skeptical about what their job entails, but gradually it all falls into place. I think we've got a great bunch of people in there. Everyone feels the same way. They love chipping in and helping out whenever we need help, you know, such as collecting tables and chairs, collecting tablecloths, glasses, wine, food, you name it. Everyone's in there doing their job.
My understanding, Erika, is that the Slow Food Noosa Convivium is one of the most popular in Australia as far as members go. Am I right?
Oh, absolutely.
And what do you put that down to?
When I joined Slow Food, came onto the committee, I think we had about 65 people. We now have over 220. And it's just sheer hard work. The reason people want to join Slow Food is that, you know, they want to come to something that's fun. They want to get involved. They want to eat good food. They want to meet the farmers. They want to know where their food comes from and, you know, what the actual Slow Food philosophy is all about. People join for a reason. There is a membership fee. There's a special membership fee, actually, for people of a certain age, and we like to encourage that. We've also got a Slow Food youth membership, and we're, you know, gradually pulling in the young people, trying to get them more involved in activities. But the main group, I would say, are the middle age group. So we've got 40-year-olds, 50-year-olds, and then we've got a whole bunch of people sort of over 65.
But it works for Noosa because they're the kind of people that have got a bit more time on their hands. They have a passion for food and for meeting new people. So it kind of works in this geographic location, doesn't it?
It does. I think when people first arrive in Noosa, they're looking for something to do. And there are so many volunteer-based groups that you can pick and choose whatever you want. So if you join, say, Rotary or Probus or the Croquet Club, you work it out whether it's for you or not. So once they come along to a Slow Food breakfast and they can see how exciting it is, you know, we're introducing these wonderful farmers, producers, talk about what they grow, where they came from, how it's all happened. And they think, yeah, that's great. You know, and I want to go and visit a farm. I want to see what the farmers do. So it's not difficult, actually.
I've heard this story before because I've been to many, many get-togethers. But for people that might be scratching their heads and thinking, well, what is slow food all about? It started in Italy. Do you want to give us the background?
Yeah, it started in Italy over 30 years ago. So we have a couple of foodies and a journalist who were outraged when they saw a fast food chain developing a shop on the Spanish Steps in Rome. So they thought, okay, we don't want fast food, we want slow food. Let's get the people out there, let's teach them something. So they introduced bowls of pasta and they said, this is what food is all about. And that's how the slow food movement started. So here we are 30 odd years later, it's spread to 150 countries with over 150,000 members. So it's all about supporting the farmers, learning about good, clean, fair food and where your food comes from, how it's grown, no chemicals, no pesticides. It's all natural. It doesn't need to be organic, but it's grown properly without any GMOs.
Now, there's an educational aspect of that as well. So when people come along to an event or part of their membership, you tell me, raffle tickets, there's involvement with local schools as well and setting up their school gardens and that kind of thing as well, isn't there, Erica?
Yes. Well, when Matt Glinsky came on board in 2007, Matt was voted as president of the Slow Food Noosa Group. He said, we need an initiative to carry this on and fundraise. And so he developed the School Kitchen Garden program. So that's where it's gone from. We fundraise. The money goes towards developing a garden at a school. So we have sent in a qualified permaculture teacher each time. They've designed the garden with the teachers and the parents, and then the children get involved in learning all about planting, looking after the plants, harvesting them, and then also learning how to cook their food. So it's developed from there, and it's gone from, well, to something fantastic, considering that Slow Food Noosa funds everything. We don't get any funding at all from the government, like Stephanie Alexander does, and it's all from our community.
I want to find out a little bit more about you, Erica. I was fascinated to learn only recently that you'd come out from Estonia. Now, you were very young. Tell me about the family history, your ancestors, where they originated from, what part of, because I have to Google map it a little bit to find out exactly. Tell me where exactly geographically Estonia is located.
Okay, Estonia is one of the three Baltic countries and it's situated far north. So it's attached to Russia on the eastern side and across the top where Russia joins Finland, we're just below that. So you've got the Baltic Sea in between Finland and Estonia. So Estonia was very rich in shale oil and over many, many centuries and years, Estonia has not had their own freedom. Many other countries have taken hold of it. And so in 1944, when Hitler evacuated its forces from Estonia, the Russians took control. They entered Estonia and that's when my parents fled. The news spread very quickly that the Russians were here and so they were in fear of their lives. They escaped separately. At that stage, they didn't know each other. My mother was from southern Estonia, a town called Rapina, and that's where she was born and raised. And my father came from a town called Petseri, which was further down south and close to the border of Russia.
And what did he do for a living?
Well, at that stage, he was in the army.
Was he?
He was in the army, okay. Yes. He was actually imprisoned during the war and he was wounded. So he was held in a compound in the furthest island south of Estonia called Saaremaa. It was something that he never really spoke about. We saw the wound on his leg as we were growing up and he always sort of brushed past it and said, oh, yes, it's just a bullet wound. And, well, of course, as young children, you didn't ask any questions. But when I went to Estonia with my two sisters in 1995 after they had gained independence, we were travelling around the countryside and we ended up on this island called Saaremaa, which is beautiful. Chris, my husband, and I travelled as far south as we could and we ended up on this road, dirt road, that had a high fence with barbed wire. And we thought, that looks a bit spooky. And we got to the end of the road and there was this lighthouse, which was black. And we thought, that's really you know, really strange. Mm. Anyhow, there was nobody around. We couldn't enter the lighthouse and we just turned around and came back and, of course, took photos. When we arrived back in Melbourne and I showed my parents the photos, my father said that this is where he had been held prisoner. And it was really quite strange that he had never spoken of this. And it was a fear that they had because they had fled this country, the Russians were there, and there were only bad things. You know, my parents never wanted to go back to Estonia after what happened to them. So they actually fled through Latvia, Lithuania, which are the other two Baltic countries. Well, my father escaped with some buddies on a boat and ended up in Gdansk, which is Poland, the port. He then made his way across, and I guess, you know, you had to find out where it was safe to go. So my mother had travelled down through the Baltic countries and ended up in Czechoslovakia and then in Germany. So when they met, it was in a DP camp, in a displaced persons camp, and there were many of them. You know, there were thousands of people just wandering around the countryside. But the armies, the US Army, had set up these camps. And it was somewhere to be housed and to be fed. My father, as I understand, went off on labouring jobs, and that was some way he could earn some money. So he occasionally would come back to the camp and meet up with my mother. At this stage, my older sister was born, and I was born 4 years after her. So they were in this camp for quite a few years until the Commonwealth government offered them sponsorship to Australia.
Yeah.
Yes. And in those days, they were looking for young, active men who could do labouring jobs because Australia at that stage was, you know, the undiscovered country, you know.
Yeah.
Estonia gained independence in 1991. That's when they sang their way to freedom.
What does that mean?
Well, Estonia and the other Baltic countries are very strong with their music and their culture. So for a number of months, they held hands across the borders, Estonia, Latvia and Lithuania, they held hands and they sang songs. And this is when Gorbachev was there and it was perestroika. Yeah. So the wall was broken.
Yeah.
The wall broke down and all of a sudden they had their freedom. So Estonia was very rich in gold. They had sent 10 million pounds of gold to England before the war broke out. So they had this money to refloat their own currency. So they got back on their feet very quickly. They had a lot of Finnish financial assistance as well. And that's how, you know, it's one of the top countries in the world.
It's remarkable. Before, you know, I'd obviously heard of Estonia, but never really delved into its history. So can I just take a step back? You mentioned 1944, the Germans were leaving because the Russians were coming in. Prior to the Second World War, was it an independent state? Was it an independent country?
Not for that long. The Russians were there in the First World War.
Right.
And then they got their freedom back. And so between about 1917 and 1939, they did have freedom for about 20 years there.
Right. But it sounds like there was incredible turmoil in that, and I assume it's geographically a very tiny...
Small. It's about half the size of Tasmania.
Wow.
Population of about 1 million.
Yeah.
That's it, you know. So their main industry is timber. It's the forests are full of timber, beautiful, beautiful pine plantations. And as I mentioned before, the shale oil.
And the gold.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. When my family basically arrived in Australia, they wanted to instill that culture in us. They wanted the girls to grow up. There were three girls at this stage because my younger sister was born in Sale in Gippsland. Their lives revolved around the church. That was one way of them connecting with other people from their country, that the language was very strong. Both my parents learned to speak English, but it was always with an accent.
Yeah.
That didn't matter. But the conversation in our house was in Estonian.
You still speak?
Oh, a little bit. I can get by.
It's like the language, like it's the same for me with Sicilian and Italian. It's if you don't use it, then you can't.
Yes, you lose
it. Forget about it. Are your mum and dad still alive?
No, unfortunately, my father passed away 20 years ago this year. He was 11 years older than my mother. He just died of old age.
How old was he?
He was 87. 87, yeah. A pretty good age.
And in good health then?
In good health all those years. Yes, they retired. My father, I think, was 60. They left Melbourne and they moved to Tasmania because my younger sister had been living down there for many, many years. So they wanted to go back to this lovely climate that reminded them of Estonia. So can you believe it? Anyhow, they settled down very close to where my sister lived and they loved it. And unfortunately, my mother had a lot of health issues over the years. So she died 12 years ago. But after my father passed away, and as I mentioned, they never wanted to go back to Estonia because there was always this fear, even though all their families were there, there were still living members of their family there.
What were they fearful of?
The Russians. They were always worried that the Russians would come back.
Even though they were an independent state?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, there was that fear. My mother went back to Estonia in 99 on her own.
Right. But she had family there.
She had family there. She had sisters there. Her older sister was 14 years older than her and she was already in her 90s.
Wow.
And she was the one that actually looked after the family because my mother's family ran a woolen mill. The parents worked in the woolen mill, so the oldest child had to look after the younger children. Yeah. My mother was the youngest of the brood.
Yeah.
So there were 6 children in total.
Do you remember talking to your mum when she returned from Estonia in the late 90s?
Yes, I do.
What were her memories? What did she tell you?
She couldn't believe that she was actually connecting with her sisters again. There were 2 sisters alive and her brother, who had fled to Canada, had also come over to join them. So there are all these wonderful memories of visiting the town where they grew up, visiting neighbouring towns, the church, the school, and just being together, sharing stories of their lives gone by and talking about their parents, of course.
Yeah. And never went back after that?
No. My mother didn't go back after. So it was 50 plus years since she had been there.
Yeah. A lot of immigrants are the same, especially if they're fleeing hardship, poverty, food is scarce. Mm. I think, you know, they all look for a better life and very rarely do they have thoughts of returning to their home country, even if their family are there. It's kind of a distant memory for a lot of them. You mentioned Sale. Is that where you settled?
We actually settled in Hayfield.
Right.
Which is close to Sale. When we arrived in Australia, we went to Bonegilla camp. And it's an old army base.
Yeah.
So the women were housed in one shed or house,
yeah,
with the children, and the men were in a separate one. So that's where we were for a few months.
You mentioned you were only one, though.
Yes, when I was 1 year old.
Who kind of filled you in on all this history? You wouldn't remember a lot about.
No, I don't. I don't. There are photographs.
Yeah.
And my parents talked about it as well. One of the things that my mother always said was that she couldn't remember when she arrived in Australia how hot and dry it was, and the food, the mutton. They were the sort of things that she talked about because Estonian food is quite different. And because they have 6 months of cold weather, they preserve a lot of their food. A lot of it is pickled.
Right.
And you know, the bottom of your house would be where you keep the potatoes and the preserves and the animals. So there's 6 months of cooking and looking after, fattening up the pig or fattening up the rabbit.
I know about, you know, a little bit about your history now and your ancestry. I've known you during this time as the president of Slow Food. What about on a professional level? What did you do for a career?
Oh, okay. All right. So basically, I left school early. I got a job in a high-end fashion house at 15. I had done a modelling course because my mother felt that us girls, the 3 girls, should be, you know, trained to walk properly and know all the etiquette there was to know. And so I went to the Brenda Marshall Modelling School when I was 15.
Is that in Melbourne?
It is in Melbourne, right. Yes, yeah. So basically all my informative years were in Melbourne. And so I got this high-end, went to this high-end fashion house, which was called the House of Youth in Collins Street. And it was actually geared on Christian Dior fashion house, the colours, the scheme, everything. And it was a real eye-opening. I mean, I was only very young, but I was with adult people and I looked a lot older. I had developed very early in life and I had, you know, I was a size 10 in those days. And so I was thrown into this modelling. I also learned how to, I had always enjoyed dressmaking. So I was in the alteration department. I had to do fittings. I had to go in these fashion shows and wear these beautiful clothes, yeah, which was amazing.
How long did you do that for?
That was for 2.5 years. After that, I hopped on a train and I went to Sydney.
To further?
Further my, I always had this idea that there was more in life for me. Both my sisters had boyfriends. My older sister had got married. My younger sister was engaged. But I felt that I really wanted to see the world. So I had actually had other jobs as well as the fashion house job. I was working in a restaurant, the Little Riata, if you might remember, in Little Collins Street. I was working in their reception area for weddings and that. So I learned a lot about food. And food, my mother had taught us how to cook. And every weekend we would sing and make, you know, the entire week's food was made that weekend. Everything was cooked and bread and, you know, rissoles and you name it, we made it. And so I had a passion for food. I had a passion for fashion. I had also done a fashion design course in the evening. So I had the clothing, I had the food, and I had the travel bug. So I arrive in Sydney as an 18-year-old and I answer an ad in the paper to share a flat. So very luckily, I must have picked the right ad because all of a sudden I found three wonderful ladies who were much older than me because I didn't tell them how old I was because I was a little bit shy about revealing my real age, thinking that, oh, they won't let me in. So all of a sudden they had their little discussion and decided I would be right for them. And about 3 months later, I admitted that I was only 18 and one girl was 21, the other two were 25. So this was in Spit Road, Mossman. So a great little area. I got a job in a cafe. I then went from cafe to working in a restaurant. Then I actually stumbled into stockbroking. Because I had the Girl Friday background as well in the fashion house. Yeah. So here I am learning all about stocks and shares. These are the heady years of Poseidon and Tasman X and a whirlwind.
What decade are we talking about?
Oh, we're talking about...
The 80s?
No. We're talking about early 70s, late 60s, early 70s. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So you were just a babe then.
I was around. I was young.
Okay.
You know, I also love the fact that you walked the Camino recently. Now, that requires, I know you just said you had a passion for travel. That requires a level of fitness that I think a lot of us don't even consider or think about. You're an active person. You exercise every day. You walk every day.
I do. I wake up in the morning, jump out of bed, and off I am walking for an hour.
Well, good genes, because you mentioned your dad was in good health. He died of old age and at 88. So you got those good genes from your dad?
We always walked because I don't think our family had a car till I was about 16. So we had to walk everywhere. Yeah. You know, we had to walk to school. We had to walk to the train station. My mother would take us wandering through the fields, you know, and collecting all this. She was a prolific gatherer of plants. It didn't matter what she collected, it would grow. She'd just stick it in the garden. I can remember saying to her once, Mum, you shouldn't be pinching those flowers out of someone's garden. You really should go and ask them if you can have them. Oh, no, they're fine. I know them. Yeah, I know those people. Don't worry. But, no, so when I decided I was going to walk the Camino and I advertised this fact to my friends, and I had two girlfriends, one in Melbourne and one in Noosa, who said, oh, can I join you? And I said, yeah, sure. This is when I'm thinking of going. So they said, okay, fine. And so I started training on my own. So every day I would get up and walk around 15 Ks a day, some days 20. So this was, I knew I was capable of doing it.
How many did you have to do per day on the Camino?
Okay, between 25 and 30.
Okay, and what's the total travel distance?
The total travel distance is about 700 Ks.
Wow.
But I didn't do the whole lot, John.
You're right.
After my two friends pulled out,
okay,
one due to health reasons and the other one due to family reasons, I thought, okay, I'm still going to do this, but I don't need to do 5 weeks of the Camino because I wanted to go back to Estonia, and it had been 10 years since I'd been there. So I thought, no, I want to go back and visit the family now. I also wanted to visit friends in Switzerland, and there were other parts of Europe that I hadn't explored before. So I thought, no, I'll break the Camino up into sections.
You did it alone too.
I did it alone.
You told me the other day.
I did it alone. Yeah. And there was never any moment of fear. I guess it's maybe in me that I can just hop on a train and go. And I had my guidebook. I had pre-booked all my accommodation on the Camino. So I knew that I was going to walk from A to B, walk 25, 28 Ks, whatever. There was a nice little room waiting for me with clean sheets, nice bath towels, a bathroom, all that. And I could still enjoy the Camino. So my bag was picked up every day at 8 o'clock, and off I'd go with my little day pack, which contained water, the travel book, and some fruit. And so I met people on the journey, talked to people. They were from all over the world. And so there was this feeling of, now, who am I going to meet today? What am I going to see today? And at the end of the day, I would have my shower. I'd go for a walk around the little town. I'd meet up with people I'd walk with. I'd have a lovely meal, either on my own or share it with people I'd walk with. But some of the establishments I stayed in had a three-course meal as part of the package. And then off I'd go the next morning. So every day it was exciting. I never knew what was ahead of me.
That's real. I mean, look, I love these stories. That real inspirational. You have this love and lust for life and for fitness and for food. Is there anything in life that you haven't accomplished yet that you think, oh, you know, there's one other thing that I'd love to do outside of the realm that you've just, or maybe it's a place, a destination you haven't been to.
Yeah, there is another little thing inside me niggling away. And it's a return to Estonia. Next year there is a big song and music festival in Estonia. They have it every 5 years, and there are thousands of people that come from all over the world. And just recently I was given a beautiful hand-embroidered outfit, which is Estonian, and this was given to me by Helen Flanagan. And I knew that Helen had an Estonian background, and she said, would you like this outfit? And I said, gosh, that would be fabulous for my little granddaughter, who's 3.5. And she said, I have no use for it. And it got me thinking about my mother's journey. And I thought, well, this is another pilgrimage that I want to do. So I hope to do it, to travel to Estonia and then walk some of the way and travel the rest of the way where she went through these towns. And I have no idea how she did it, except I know that she made it to Germany, where I was born.
Right.
In a town called Weiden, and that's about 100 k's northeast of Nuremberg. And I actually came through this town when I went to Europe in 1973. And I was traveling around Europe with a girlfriend in a little VW. Here we were, you know, camping gear, just, you know, where are we going to go today? That type of thing. And we arrived in this town, Weiden, and I thought, oh, I'd really like to see this town, but because it was a weekend, there was nothing open. The town hall was closed, and I would have liked to have seen documentation for my birth certificate, something like that. I've never had a birth certificate. So I would like to go back to this town. I'd like to go back to some of the other towns where we were in camps, and then work my way through other parts of Europe that I've been to and haven't been to, and just make this my mother's journey.
Wow.
And maybe document this again. I have wonderful photographs that, you know, lovely black and white stills that were taken when my father came out to Australia, when my mother came out to Australia, all those things that I'll put together in a diary for my son and for his children.
Great. Erica, I really appreciate you coming in and spending some time and shedding some light on other parts of your life that a lot of people aren't aware of. And
thank you, John. So it's thank been you, Erica. Wonderful. Thank you.
Erica Hackett was my guest today in Conversations in Noosa. I hope you enjoyed that. Feel free to share it with family members and friends on social media. And don't forget, there are two fresh podcasts every Monday and every Thursday on our In Noosa Magazine website, innoosamagazine.com.au/conversations.